Hey friends, we wanted to take a quick minute and personally invite you to two really special gatherings coming this fall. First, our intentional motherhood retreat in Portland, Oregon, October 15th through the 17th, and then our intentional fatherhood retreat in Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Honestly, these retreats have become so much more than events for us. They've become spaces where people encounter God, experience healing, honesty, friendship, freedom, and real transformation. We live in a world that is full of information. We have podcasts, books, content, advice, but transformation requires more than information. Sometimes you need space, you need community, you need honesty, you need the presence of God, and you need to get around other people who are fighting for the same things you are. At these events, we've watched marriages soften again. We've watched fathers come out of hiding. We've watched mothers breathe deeply again. We've watched people feel seen, known, challenged, and deeply encouraged. And we would genuinely love for you to join us. You can learn more and grab tickets at intentionalparents.org. And for all things fatherhood, you can visit intentionalfatherhood.org. We hope to see you there. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Well, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. And Phil and Diane, Elizabeth and I today talking about, is this generation as hard as it feels? Are we just making it up? Is parenting actually harder than when Phil and Diane, you guys were raising kids? And what are the maybe details that we're experiencing right now, Elizabeth and I, our generation, as we're raising kids now, versus past generations? And what are five different things we can do to actually, if it is harder, wink, wink, it might be, what do we do about that biblically, practically, psychologically, relationally, all that stuff? So that's where we're going today. We are in the middle of, what is it? What's today? March? We're in March. People are on spring break right now. We're about to be on spring break as well. We have all that fun stuff happening. We have no plans for that because life has kind of been up in the air for lots of reasons. But Phil and Diane, you guys are about to go away to something special.
We are.
God willing. Tell us what's happening.
If you and I get back from our speaking time.
I love how everything's through the lens of death. And if I land on the plane and then if I don't get in a car accident and then I don't die on the way to the airport. It's good. You're right. You're living in the moment. Well, what are you guys doing?
Well, we're going to celebrate our anniversary early, which we try to do every year because in the off season, the place we go to is less expensive.
And it's
very expensive now in Carmel, California, where we had a glorious honeymoon in 1978.
Yeah. So you guys still go back to the same spot?
Yes.
We do.
You guys still get the same room?
Yes.
Is that right?
That's why we book it a year in advance, right?
We do. Like before we leave this year, we'll book it for next year the same week. Because it's really popular place and lots of people book their same week.
Wow. You're able to get the same room.
It's still there.
I was just going to ask, has it been remodeled a ton since then?
It's been remodeled. Well, let's just say you and Elizabeth wouldn't think it was cool.
No, but it's nostalgic.
It's nostalgic and it's right on the Pacific Ocean. And yes, they have remodeled it, but
it's on actually on cliffs overlooking the Pacific Ocean. Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, but when we got married, you could get a fireplace room overlooking the ocean for $82 a night.
Oh, and we thought that was so expensive.
And I couldn't afford that then. Yeah. You know, I starved myself during our engagement because I was so looking forward to that time together and we were there. But anyway, it's a lot more expensive now. So we just save up our money because we like to say we don't want to say, oh, we once were romantically in love. We want to say that we still are.
Wow.
And we really look forward to it. Yeah. It's like, I mean, for us, we'd rather go there than Hawaii or whatever. Yeah,
it's special. But, that's a cool idea to find the same spot and keep going to it. Like that is a really beautiful idea. It's so funny. The place where we went on our honeymoon doesn't even exist anymore. It's a whole different place. That hotel in Maui is a whole different spot. Mm. Well, we're coming at you today and we want to talk to you about a handful of things. Thank you for rating, subscribing, taking a second to do that. Huge, huge, huge help. It is the way that you get this out. So if anybody's like, this is helpful, this is the way to do it. You rate, subscribe, share this content, share it with a friend. If an episode helps, do that. Thank you for everyone that has. Phil and Diane, I know that we processed a little bit, but you were at the fatherhood retreat. We're getting ready for the next motherhood retreat. So obviously, if you're listening past April 23rd, that's already happened for the motherhood retreat. But that said, we're about to get ready to have so many moms with us in Nashville, April 23rd through the 25th. But I'd just love to hear briefly, because we want to get into this content. But you guys got to come, you were at the fatherhood retreat, and you played such a fatherly and motherly role over all of those men. All the men that had father wounds, all the men that had mother wounds, I think in many ways were able to have a level of connection and healing with you guys in a beautiful way. But I'd love to hear briefly, what was your experience of that? Because it was a different kind of experience. Mm-hmm. And I think you guys played such a pivotal role, but I would love to know what that was like for you guys.
Well, for me, it was just thrilling, honestly, to see well over 600 men completely fill that building. Mm. All in, worshiping, intent on being godly men and godly husbands and godly fathers, yet knowing their own reality was just, to me, it just felt like the Spirit of God just filled that place. And at one point I sat back and thought, oh, the Father is so pleased right now. Mm. He's just thrilled with what's happening. And then getting to talk to the individual men was also a thrill to hear their hearts of what they genuinely want. When young man, I mean, to me, they're all young, came up to me and said, well, talk to me. Would you just give me some motherly advice, to use that word, motherly advice to be really a good husband to my wife? I feel like I'm not enough. It was just like, who asked those questions? That's so wise men ask those questions. Yeah. So yeah, I loved it. I loved every minute of it.
I mean, how much time do you have?
Yeah. Not a lot. But keep
well, for me, it was a lot of things going on. So, you know, when Intentional came out of the church that the four of us and Jean-Marc and others had the privilege of planting, and all these young people came and started getting married and having their first baby, and they were truly walking with God. And we got asked to launch this thing to help train them to raise passionate Jesus followers. And we started teaching, started getting invited to churches, but it was just, I was still on staff at the church. It was just Diane and me, and we were doing a few conferences. The book wasn't out yet, but our leaders of our church said, you need to form a nonprofit because the need is going to be huge and we can't just send you everywhere. And so the night that we, as a little Intentional board, were approving our application to be a nonprofit, Diane said, I want it put in the minutes of this meeting that this is no small thing. And I looked at her like, that's a pretty small thing, compared to the size of the church that we all got to be part of. But out of respect for her, we put it in the minutes. So I share that story because we're at the fatherhood retreat and we're singing the second song. And by the way, the other thing about it is I felt about this first fatherhood retreat the way I felt about the first motherhood retreat. As soon as the worship started, there was a strong sense of the presence of God in the building, in the singing.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm a worship guy, so I'm very sensitive to singing.
Mm-hmm.
When 600 men were singing the chorus to Holy Forever and the angels cry, I started crying.
Yeah. You know? Of course. Of course.
But I leaned over to Diane and I, because, you know, she can't hear that well because she's deaf. She's wearing a cochlear implant and it's loud in there. I mean, the men are singing and the band is amazing. Yeah. And I go, can you hear me? I'm yelling at her. She said, yes. And I said, do you remember when you said, this is no small thing? And I said, look at this.
Wow.
This is no small thing. So I felt like it was a God thing, was the beginning of more. And then I have so many other memories seeing when you're up there teaching along with Justin, and one of you would start reading a scripture passage and I'd see men with notebooks writing stuff down. So there was a hunger. And then, of course, personally, yes, these guys were constantly coming up. And to me, it was many guys with father wounds.
Yes.
You know, I remember one, like my dad died. And his funeral's next week. Will you pray for me? I go, was he a good father? No. You know, just so I was, I was
so
like,
there helping,
just praying over guys. I think standing between God representing God the Father to them.
Yes. Yeah.
Because for whatever reasons, their earthly father was not able to, either from their own brokenness or they didn't know the Lord or whatever. Yeah. So I think that's where the family of God comes in. Mm. So I could say more, but I think at an event like this, there's a lot of men, you know, fathering other men. And then we being older got to represent God, God the Father, kind of fathering the fathers. It was a privilege. So
it was
that's how
beautiful.
I felt.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for sharing that.
And I'm glad you're hopefully planning more. I hope you are.
Yes, it's quite a dilemma. it's both a beautiful thing and a blessing because they're, you know, I'd love to do these all over the place, but you know, you have logistics and financial obligations. And so, yeah, this is a great way to say it. If you want more of this stuff, email us hello@intentionalparents.org. Ask how you can help. We can let you know. We'll let you know how to help. But one of the things we did was just even say, hey, if you have a church that we can use, let us know. And we did that. And there was probably at least at this point, 15 plus churches that have responded and said, come out to this area and all over the country, still praying into areas of Texas. So if you're specifically a decision maker of a church or lead a church in that area, Texas is one of those spots that we have so many people that listen on both the Intentional Fatherhood podcast, but also the Intentional Parents podcast. And so and Texas is just very central and it's a great spot. So anyway, couldn't say enough good stuff as well. My favorite thing was some of us had, there was a good friend of one of our friends who gave us some tickets to Disneyland and my kids were in town. So I was like, okay, I'm going to, you know, we'll go to Disneyland. Of course, we've got to do this. We're here. I have my kids, you know. Make a fun thing. They worked really hard that weekend. But my favorite thing was when we're at Disneyland, because Elizabeth had back surgery only 3 weeks or 2 weeks prior at that point. Or it was 2 weeks prior.
1 week.
Gosh, it has been a blur. So obviously she wasn't going to Disneyland. But so you guys were, Elizabeth, Bill and Diane were on their way back home. And I just get pictures of Elizabeth sending the group chat like, well, the fatherhood retreat is still going on at the airport and Phil's just holding this grown man crying just for a very long time in a beautiful moment. And whoever you are, if you do hear this, what a gift. Because it was so cool to see that moment just continue. And so anyway, Phil and Diane, thank you for all that you gave to these men and their wives, you know, because the thing that we keep hearing, which is the best thing to hear, is it's actually helped me live differently when getting home. I mean, that's everything, you know, that is the whole prayer and that's the Holy Spirit. That's a whole host of things. But
yeah, I actually talked to a woman on the phone who was a receptionist or admin who said that her husband had gone and he was already immediately implementing some of the practices that you guys gave with their kids at night.
Wow.
And what a thrill that was for her.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's the most encouraging. Well, that's some update stuff. Why is this generation of parenting so hard? Why is it so hard? Maybe it's because we're weaker or softer. Have we thought about this? Like, have we actually taken some room to think this could be the case? Now I know it's not, but what we want to talk about is really identifying, is this true? Like, how true is this? And is this just something that we feel? Because we can see more of life and we're hyper-connected or not. And I think we need to just kind of name some of our collective exhaustion, if we could. Obviously parenting feels very heavy right at this moment, for sure. But it's not because we're all failing. The load has changed. And why we want to do this conversation together especially is because we can actually have, you know, basically an idea of then versus now. What was parenting like then and why does parenting feel harder? So I would love to hear from you, Phil and Diane, your experience, like, cause you kind of see both sides of this. You raised your kids in the 80s, 90s, 2000s. Are we all crazy? What is your take of where we're at currently? And what was it like then versus now?
Well, I think on so many levels, it was easier for us in the 80s and 90s. It doesn't mean it was easy. Mm-hmm. It was easier economically. I mean, I was a stay-at-home mom for years and years and years in the San Francisco Bay Area and Santa Cruz.
Wow.
While Phil had a probably below average associate pastors. He was a worship pastor salary. And we owned a home and didn't ever go into deep debt and dressed our kids, you know, cheap, but nicely. And we went on vacation. Now, our vacations were simple, but I mean,
you still did.
It was actually possible then. That, of course, would be completely impossible now, especially in the Bay Area. So, I mean, that alone, the economics involved is also very few of our friends carried any sort of school debt back then. So most parents now are bringing in, both of them bringing in a huge amount of school debt. And that is a huge factor nobody even talks about. So, yeah, I think just economically, it was easier for us to split the load, for me to focus on raising kids at home during the day and Phil to focus on his career during the day. And then we would come together and very much share parenting in the evenings and weekends. That's really only possible in a few places in the U.S., I think, right now.
Phil, what are you thinking?
Oh, yeah. What you said is totally true. But I think we still had to make decisions. I think every generation has to. I mean, we still had to make decisions. Like, I remember one guy I was on staff with whose wife was a dental hygienist. They had a way nicer house. They had nicer cars. They had more money in the bank. And, you know, we would look at our crummy little first. Yeah, we had a house. It was not a very nice house. And, you know, my dad was able to loan me some money to get into it. I didn't have a down, you know, so I was blessed that way. And we, you know, tried to help when needed with our own kids. But I think that we still had to say, you know, no to some things. But it was definitely, I mean, it definitely was easier to do than it is now. I mean, and that all changed in about 10 years. I remember by the mid 80s, it was getting ridiculously hard to be able to buy a house. And now it's just astronomical. So, but that's Silicon Valley. So,
and that's the financial load.
That's
which
the
is
financial
huge.
Load. But then there's the other load of what you guys are facing, just the speed of life and the noise of life. And we didn't have to, I mean, when we first got married, I mean, I was typing sermons on a typewriter, you know, there was no internet yet.
Yeah.
There were no cell phones yet. I would come back from a lunch meeting with somebody and there'd be five paper messages on my desk. Call Brooke Moser, here's his number, you know, and I had a landline phone and that, you know, it
had
was,
limits.
Now we think, oh, how could you survive?
Yeah.
You know,
sounds like she's very nice at this point.
But it enabled you to prioritize more. Like the tyranny of the urgent was far less.
Exactly.
So he could take those five messages and decide when he was going to call them back. And work rarely spilled, even ministry rarely spilled over into family time.
And yes. And then, you know, and most of our vacations until your parents. Tell your parents retired, Diane, and got that cabin. We went camping. You know, we weren't going to Hawaii. Things like, but I have noticed that every generation does have to decide, like, what is a necessity? Like my parents' generation. I mean, my parents had nothing when they got married, and but neither did any of their friends. And so for a coffee table, I remember this specifically, they get a wooden orange crate, and that was fine. Well, we got married. We're not going to have a wooden orange crate for our coffee table. We're going to get a coffee table somewhere or another, you know.
Yes. And,
but we weren't even thinking about, you know, going to Hawaii for a vacation.
And so
I just think that in America, there's this has always been, you know, more, you know. And then
now it's happening.
And, you know, there's always a small, minuscule percentage of people that have got so much money they can do whatever they want, but most of us have to make decisions. And so I think what I'm trying to say is it was easier, but we did have to make decisions and there were people that had more than we did. But we just had the privilege of that era. We had much more relaxed time. Right. And you know, when I became a lead pastor at Santa Cruz, you know, that's when, you know, there's pressure. Even more pressure as a lead pastor than as associate pastor. But one of our elders knocked on my door one night, banged on the door, and he was a wrestling coach. He just pushed me out of the way, and he walked in with an answering machine that he had bought. And he goes, plug this in, because I was talking about how I'm getting constant calls. And so he said, use this answer machine and screen your calls, you know. Yeah. So, you know, you can just look at your iPhone and decide if you're going to answer
and it's with
or not.
You constantly. It's like,
so, know, we were having to make decisions, you know,
along the way.
Am I going to leave my family and deal with this person, or am I going to? So I think every family has to make those decisions all along. Yes. Like, because, you know, like you like to say, Brooke, every yes has a corresponding no. And I think every decision I make, you have to look at priorities. Yes. So I think every generation has to do that.
Yeah.
But for yours, it's harder because it's moving so quick and there are so many opportunities.
Yes.
I mean, think of, you're wearing jeans today. All right. Sure. When I was a kid, there were two or three brands of jeans. Levi's, Lee, and something else.
Okay.
Well, I went to look at jeans at Nordstrom Rack the other day. There was like gazillion kinds of jeans. And I'm like, I don't have time to figure out which ones I even want to try on.
Yes.
So, but everything's that way. Like, you know, there's multiple options of fast food. There's multiple restaurants to go to.
Too many.
I think that adds a ton of stress to your generation.
Maybe like decision fatigue is added to the whole weight.
I think so. And then the speed and the noise of life, it's like,
Well, every generation has to, you know, they help their kids eat, they help their kids sleep. You make them behave, right? That's the idea. You keep them safe. Now that's all a part of parenting and was a part. And to say in any generation, parenting is challenging. So we are not saying, oh man, we got so hard now. But we have to just note and be fair that parenting at a base level is challenging. But we do have to also nuance, at least in the Western parts of the world that we experience it, and that most people will probably come in contact with this and like this content, the pace of our world is a factor and it's changing because right now we have that, right? We have that with all four of our kids, but we have the now this new mental load, like this new emotional load, emotional regulation. Now we know about secure attachment. You know how nice it was to not know about secure attachment? That was really nice to not know about. We're always concerned about preventing future trauma.
Yes.
Like how many things you do and you're like, oh no, I've just traumatized them.
Well, like all that thinking stuff. About our own mental health and addressing our own trauma while also thinking about our kids' mental health.
Right.
And that idea, you know, and this has been talked about, like anybody who's on social media, there's so many people talking about, like joking of like how much we are now, especially moms, now responsible for. You're not just the mother, you're the therapist, the teacher, the psychiatrist, the like, but the reality of that is true. Like, and on one side, it is such a gift to our kids' generation and to us to have an understanding of how to be emotionally attuned to our kids. But obviously, just like any generation does, we saw the pendulum swing from like your generation of that just wasn't a huge thing on anybody's radar to now it's like all the way the other direction where we're like, in some senses, overly concerned about what might happen in the future if we don't do these certain things now. And I think it's probably our kids' generation that are going to bring it back to a more balanced level. But I know, I mean, I'll just speak for my own self. That is a huge weight that I feel of like where I could almost go around and tell you the things I think my kids are going to sit in a therapist office talking about someday.
Yeah. Which is also not always helpful knowing that. It's like there's a part of that that's not helpful.
Totally.
Yeah.
I was also just reading an article that Jonathan Haidt wrote.
Who? I'm just kidding. I just wait.
The guy who wrote The Anxious Generation, okay?
We have that joke anytime a big name comes up. We do this with John Mark all the time. Just say John Mark, you're like, who?
Who's that guy? I never heard
that
guy.
That's my favorite.
But subscribe to his newsletter, by the way. Like, just...
Wait, don't. You sent me that this morning?
Yeah.
That is the most anxiety-producing email I have ever seen. I was so sad that you got it and sent it to me because I was like, you don't need this kind of email.
I sent it to you as research for the work that we do.
This was not research. This was like, hey, guess what? Were you scared? Guess what? Be even more scared for in these, not exaggeration, 30 ways. 30. 30 ways of which everything's going to blow up in your life and your children's life and that everything's hard. So I'm just going to tell you, yes, like, but beware screen, because if you are prone to anxiety, which I'm not even prone to anxiety like that. And I was like, I can't even get to the first 10. Yeah. Like, I'm out. No way. I'm not doing this. I was like, this is why people go crazy.
Okay. Well, this is not,
I'm sorry,
that
I'll be done.
Article.
I'll be done. Yep.
But he was talking about how, our generation right now, we spend so much more time with our kids than your generation did. Mm-hmm. And he did a beautiful job walking through why, like how it used to be that we all trusted our neighbors.
Yeah.
And we knew our neighbors. And so kids were outside playing independently, starting mm-hmm. at a pretty young age. And you trusted that the older kids in the neighborhood would watch over some mm-hmm. of the youngers. If somebody got hurt, somebody was going to go knock on a neighbor's door and get help. Yeah. And there was that trust built. And yeah. so kids spend hours a day away from you mm-hmm. learning really, really important life skills. Yep. Being anxious, having to like, oh, I just got hurt and I need to ask somebody I don't know for help. Mm-hmm. Like the skills that kids were building yeah. in that moment, mm-hmm. kids are no longer building.
Yeah.
So kids are now, we don't trust our neighbors. We don't trust our kids doing anything outside of like these, this little bubble we've put them in. Mm-hmm. So they're always with us. And he was talking about how not only is that really hard on the parents, like the parents' mental health, because we are on all the time. But how harmful he, and his article was basically saying we are destroying this generation yes. of kids, because this is why they're not resilient, because they are not ever having to be put in a situation where they can build those muscles to become resilient. Now, he said it really bluntly. I know David and Sissy Goff are starting a whole series on their podcast. And I think it will be phrased much more compassionate, but about this very thing yeah. of like, yeah. we've got these really capable kids who are acting as if they are entirely not capable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And lots of reasons for it. But I just thought that was a really interesting highlight of the difference between yeah. the skills those kids were building by being away from us.
Well, and maybe I think just to name this, because what we really want to do is get to like, how do we actually think about this? What are the things we need to do? Mm-hmm. So we have the physicality now, and there's always, especially if you want to be an intentional parent, I think the side effect of intentional parenting, a negative side effect, is that it's hard to know when to like actually, where is the line of like, hey, I can't actually be so intentional to solve this problem. Like there's just certain problems mm-hmm. that exist. And so there's a line there where you have to understand like there is points to where we cannot like fix everything and fix every problem. But maybe to name it a little more clearly, now we have the physical load, but there's this invisible mental load now.
Yeah.
Where before it was like, yes, it's physical and some of it's mental for sure, but there's a very big invisible mental load now with parenting that sometimes gets talked about, sometimes doesn't. There's a couple on the list. Understanding, you're supposed to understand your emotions and theirs. Mm-hmm. It's hard to understand my own emotions. I'm supposed to understand my 10-year-old with special needs. That's interesting. That's a hard one. parenting without shame. Like, I want to parent, but I don't want to add shame. So then you're like constantly thinking, well, is how I said that going to potentially, you know, overwhelm them? You're trying to reparent yourself as you're trying to parent your kids. That's a big part of my story, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's, we can keep going, but you're not just raising a child. In many ways, you're rewriting patterns in your life and their life at the same time. And so yeah. I think it's, I just want to name some of that so we can know like it is a combination of, yes, our generation, Elizabeth, you and I think there's a level of toughness and there's a level of also like some are really not tough and they just crumble real quick. Mm-hmm. But it's also the truth that it is hard. It's really different. And the dynamics of even technology, the stress yeah. that it adds on our family, yes. just to know like, where's the technology boundaries? And then how does that apply to each kid at their particular stage? And then what's enough? What's not too much?
Well, like, and it's just constantly changing. So it's not like you can like set a, this is how our family does it. You have to be constantly learning and yeah. educating.
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying. Honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, "and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
I was also just thinking too, I was talking to Bex, my sister, mm-hmm. is in town. I was talking to her about this yesterday. There's such a, and let's see if I can, this is just a thought coming to me now. So let's see if I can articulate
it. Don't get canceled.
No. I'm just trying to think of the best way to articulate it. So because it's changed so drastically in a short period of time, I still carry in my own body, in my own thoughts of what I think our family life should look like, because mm-hmm. I grew up with a good family life. So I didn't set out to drastically change how we do family, which I know not everybody can say. A lot of people are like, I want it to look nothing like how I grew up with. But there's a lot that I would like it to look like. So I find myself very often where just our family dynamic is also different than what I grew up with. Even just the addition of having neurodiverse kids. And just all the things that have happened in our story. But I still find that I'm wrestling in my mind while I'm trying to parent in the present with all the things Brooke just named, of just all the things I'm now aware of. I'm also wrestling what I think all of this should look like.
Yeah.
Because that's my expectations and my own lived experience in my own body. Mm-hmm. So like there'll be interactions with my kids and I've got like, on one side of my brain, that's like, I was never allowed to talk to my parents that way. Why do my kids feel like they can talk to me that way or talk to each other this way? You know, while I'm also like trying to be present to them and what's happening in the moment and parent them how I've now learned is a good way to parent. Like there's this internal wrestle within me that has been helpful recently for me to at least name that it's happening, that I feel divided while I'm trying to feel present. Does that make sense? Like, because it's not like this was four generations ago and I just know a little bit about it. It's like, no, this was not that long ago and it is still in me.
Because the reality is these changes happen so fast.
Yes.
The way my parents raised us was not drastically different than their parents raised them.
Yes.
It was, you know, somewhat different, but not drastically.
No. Yeah.
So let's just the practical reality, maybe just to sum, because I want to move us to these five parts, which are going to be kind of the meat and the really the, I think a lot of the gold, hopefully for all of us, but where there's a lot of scripture based here. So the practical reality, let's just sum that up. We have a list here. Child costs, child care costs have skyrocketed. So just even caring for your kids.
Even just going on a date night. I mean, I made 75 cents an hour. Babysitting a dollar after midnight because I never have liked to stay up late. So I was going to try and get them to not go. I mean, just think about that.
That's insane.
That's life wasn't that much less expensive.
No. So you have that. You have wages have stagnated, housing consumption, like you name this. Now you have work that's unstable. Families are scattered. Neighbors don't know each other.
Yeah.
That's a big part.
That's a big one.
Help is inconsistent. We experience that. Isolation's higher than ever. So you have less support, higher cost. It equals really in many ways an impossible equation for all of us. And so you're
Can
not
add
wrong.
One thing to
Please
that list?
Add anything. Yeah. And I'm gonna,
the other thing I would add to that list is, you know, we keep hearing this left and right. Mom's working on a project with this. Our generation, many of them are saying, where is the older generation?
Right.
They're not involved and helping and a part of the solution. In many ways, they add an additional weight.
Yeah.
There's a recent study that came out. It was a whole article. I can't remember what it is. I can refer to it. If I remember, I'll put it in the show notes. But it was basically highlighting, and this isn't you guys, but in general, the boomer generation is the most selfish generation that has ever existed on this planet.
Wow.
And they're finding that now because as the boomer generation has gotten to the age of retirement and not only the with money, especially, but with time. And we're seeing this all over the place, right? And that's why I think it's so interesting right now in this moment when grandparents decide to literally, and adult parents of adult children decide to just be still present. Why it's so radical what you guys are doing is because it is not the norm at all. By and large, unfortunately, the boomer generation right now has gotten the rap of the most selfish generation to date. Now, I don't know all the other ones. It probably seems a little drastic and maybe not completely fair. Nonetheless, that's the rep that is kind of the common and the norm. And so that also plays into the fact that so many kids, but adult folks in our age and stage with adult parents are feeling this burn and this tension.
Yeah.
And so you're raising kids and you're trying to become the parent that you wish you had all at the same time, because now we have all this knowledge of all the things we can do to repair. Mm-hmm. And that's not always helpful. And so maybe just to say all of that, that's happening in real time. Those are real pressures. Mm-hmm. They're real dynamics and they're not excuses. I want to be really clear for anybody listening. It's like, this is why I don't have to be a good parent. This is also why my parents are always missing it. They don't understand. And don't use this as fuel. Mm-hmm. Be gracious. Like, yes, it's a lot, but it's more for you to know that you're not crazy. So what do we do about it? And that's really what we want to land and end our time with, is like, what do we actually do about all of this? Yeah. One thing. Yeah.
I want to just throw something in with all of this is that because marriage has been more and more difficult over the generations for a variety of reasons, there are also more parents doing it alone. And grandparents also. So many of you don't have grandparents who were able to stay married. And that has an economic impact and a relational impact, and impacts how available they're going to be to do what they probably would have loved to have done. And that has been very available to help.
Yeah.
And so you kids were raised with the very real threat of a marriage not lasting 62 years like Phil's and my parents did. We didn't have that shadow hanging over us. And it is a very real possibility. And I think that adds a very quiet weight to every young couple right now, trying to struggle through to make their marriage work, knowing that it's a higher likelihood than it was for our generation and our parents' generation that it wouldn't work. And I think that has to be factored in as well.
Yeah.
And yes, we want to go to solutions, but I do just want to say, I'm really glad I'm not raising my kids in this generation, you know, because what would have been expected of me, I think I would have crumbled under the weight.
Oh, you're stronger than you realize. You're stronger than you realize. Yeah. But I also think that's why it's imperative to recognize, like, we need you guys. Like, we really do. Like, it's not really a luxury. It's a luxury. It's also now become more of a necessity to do life in these types of ways. Because the load that you guys are able, and our situation, to name it very clearly, is diverse in that sense of, the needs are high and low, and they're ever changing because of our health situation with you, Elizabeth, but also with our kids. It's so, we have a dynamic situation.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, even if it wasn't that dynamic, it's parents having an adult parents with adult children having involvement with their life and their kids' lives is becoming more of a necessity than it is even a luxury to do this well. And so I think that's where a lot of the work that we're teasing out with this word generations is so imperative, because it's something that we need to actually be able to parent right now in the moment that we're all naming of, like, well, what do we even do? So obviously these are not going to just be solutions, meaning like some of these are not, it's not even solutions. It's like
to lean into.
It's like, how do we even process this? And some of it will be perspective and some of it will be practical help. But I just want to say, like, this is something that we need to start thinking about. So if you felt overwhelmed and you felt like, gosh, it just feels a little extra, you're not wrong. It's extra. And thank you, Phil and Diane, for validating that. So first, how does God meet us in this different load, in this generation? First, God meets us in limits, not just in strength. Elizabeth, maybe just for a minute, I know you do a lot of work around this. What would your couple thoughts be around this idea of God meeting us in our limits, not just in our strengths?
Yeah, you know, I think, and I don't think this is our generation as a whole, but I think oftentimes our generation complains about how hard it is. And I do too, very often, all too often. Just ask my husband. But
where do you think you got it from? Your dad. But it was cool. It was one of those passive, you know, he didn't mean to pass on. It just came.
But I think some of that complaining that this generation does is masking a deeper symptom of disappointment and grief and death of ideals of what this was going to look and maybe more importantly, feel like. Because we've also been fed a lie from birth by culture and in some streams of the church where just little bits of prosperity gospel have seeped in that this is all supposed to feel amazing. Mm-hmm. And my life is supposed to look like everything I see every day. And it seems like everybody else has so much more and everyone else is a great mom. And mm-hmm. and then we come to our real actual lives and lived experience and we're frustrated, we're angry, we're disappointed, because really underneath that is like a disappointment and a grief of like, oh, this is not giving me everything I thought it was going to. Mm-hmm. And so I think like being able to slow down enough and like let yourself name some of that, feel some of that mm-hmm. is the only way you move to actually being able to accept your limits authentically and actually mm-hmm. being able to enjoy the life you actually have, not the mm-hmm. one you wish you had. And obviously, like the deeper you dive into the scriptures, the more I was talking to mom the other day, I was like, I am struggling to understand how any prosperity gospel ever made its way into any yes. theology or church mm-hmm. because we just don't see it mm-hmm. in the scriptures. We see a strong theme of life being hard and of suffering and mm-hmm. of who God is in the midst of that and in what that actually does to you and for
yes.
you.
Yes.
And so the same is true in our limits of like a beautiful passage, an exchange between Paul and God, where he's asking God to take away this physical ailment of some kind that he has. He says he pleaded with God, like begged with God 3 times to take it away. I think we've talked about this several times on the podcast. But God's response to him is not yes. He doesn't answer his prayer like he'd hoped. Yeah. But it's when he says that beautiful verse that my strength is made perfect in your weakness.
Yeah.
And that is what we have to surrender to in our generation. Do yeah. we yeah. have what it takes to play all of those perceived roles that we think we need to play with our kids? No.
No.
Not even close.
We don't. And we were never supposed to. Yeah. And so like the more we can, rather than we spend so much energy trying to resist that and trying to resist the limits and become limitless and just crush it at everything. But I think the invitation from the Spirit in all generations, but I think it's so beautiful to see how applicable scripture is like right now. Yeah. And I think this is specifically applicable to this generation of like, can I take all the things that I am not and that I'm worried about that I'm not? I'm worried I'm shaming my kids too much. I'm worried I'm not aware of my own emotions and therefore not aware of theirs. Yeah, like, yeah. Can I take yeah. all of that and can I trust that that's yeah. where God's power can show yes. up? When I surrender to him, when I repent, when I bring all of those things to him on a regular basis, mm-hmm. can I trust that the scripture is true?
Yeah.
That
yeah.
that's actually where his strength shows up. And so rather than just like crumbling and complaining, just being honest of like, yeah, this is 10x harder than what I thought it was going to be. Yeah. Here's all the parts I'm not handling well. But here's who God says he is. And I know he can yeah. do that to me.
You know, that's kind of in the passage you read. You know, Paul, he had some kind of an illness. Mm-hmm. I personally think it was an eye disease because he says, I know you would pluck out your own eyes and give them to me. But we don't know exactly what it was. But in that passage, when God said, no, I'm not going to heal you because I'm going to do something deeper within you, he accepted it. Like the next verse, verse 10, he says, I'm content mm-hmm. with weaknesses. For when I'm weak, I'm strong. So he was able to trust in the Lord so deeply that God was going to meet his need yeah. in that situation. Yeah. And I just Absolutely. Think that God will meet our needs. And I think that it but he wants to see us be dependent upon him. You know, I came across this real cool quote, and Brooke asked me for it. I did text it to you.
I got it. Yeah, thank you.
Hudson Taylor, he was one of the greatest, most famous missionaries to China. And he was just this humble man. And God uses broken, humble, dependent people. But he became famous for what God did through him in China. And so people were always asking him, like, what's your secret? And, you know, he actually, his whole secret was Christ in you. But he, I'd never seen this quote before. Here's what he said. God was looking for someone weak enough to use, and he found me. So I just think that this is important. Like, and so what we do with all this anxiety, you know, there's a psalm, I think it's 56. Yeah, I marked it here. It's 55:22. Cast your burden upon the Lord, and he will sustain you. Well, in the Hebrew, it's cast what he has given you upon the Lord, and he will sustain you. So I think you got to cast your children upon the Lord. You got to cast your marriage upon the Lord. You got to cast your anxiety upon the Lord. You got to, I can't, this isn't working. I can't figure out how it's going to work. Lord, help me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just think God is so quick to come in those moments, and it might not be what we think we need. Sometimes we think we need more money, or we think we need this, and he might be actually trying to redirect us.
Absolutely.
You know, a guy told me recently they're moving to be close to his parents. Okay. And so obviously there's some parents that want to be intentional grandparents, but they're geographically in a completely other city.
Yeah.
So this guy must be at work from home or something. And they said, you know what? It's worth it. Just our parents are saying, if you were here, we'd watch him every third, whatever. Like, we were able to be, it was easier for us when we were all in Portland. When you guys were raising your kids, you lived one point across the street, but then you live, you know, 10 minutes away. And now it's harder for, you know, five of our grandkids are not here in Bend. So I think that, you know, there was that probably came through prayer. Like, what are we going to do? We can't handle this. We need help. And they I don't know the story there, but something prompted them to do something drastic as to move. So I think that kind of stuff can happen when we cast ourselves upon the Lord.
I would just add one thing too. We are so afraid that our children are going to have limitations if we don't provide all these experiences for them. And if we are not completely emotionally mature, it's going to hurt our kids. But in my lived experience, you kids, your brothers and sister, chose to follow Jesus and follow the same, you know, faith that we had, although you matured it in many ways, not because we did such an amazing job of giving you everything you needed emotionally, spiritually. And we made tons of really, now it would seem like, obvious mistakes. But because the reason I think that you were so attracted to Jesus was because you saw God actually taking us in our weakness and maturing us over the 20 year. And even now, you're even watching now how God is waking us up in certain areas of our life. And I think that's a more compelling reason to follow Jesus than, oh, because I want to be as great a parent as my parents were or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
So your kids are going to grow up with some hurts and lack in areas that you are unaware of right now.
Yeah.
Or you might be vaguely aware of, and it's just not enough.
Yeah.
And those are the very things that are going to draw them also to not just a happy faith where God is just going to always make life work for them, but into an honest to goodness, dependent discipleship kind of faith. Like, I'm going to apprentice to Jesus because I see this is the only way to survive. Let alone to thrive.
And you know, it's really weird that this popped in my head. I'm so glad you said that. So I remember when you, Brooke, had a full-time job on staff at a church, and you felt God calling you to move to LA, and there was a church there that wanted you, but they couldn't afford you right then. They said, hey, we'd like to bring you on staff, but if you want to, but our thing is you got to move down here and get a job. And that was their philosophy. You know, they're kind of, and some churches say, hey, we want you to just be out in the world working. So I watched you move down there. Like, I wouldn't have done that. I said, I'm not going to. That's crazy. You moved down there and yeah. Scarlett wasn't able at her age to do the drive. So she stayed at our house for a couple of days and Diane flew her down.
I remember, yeah.
I wasn't there. She bragged about you. She went into that little apartment.
Yeah, one bedroom.
And you had a couple very unglamorous jobs. Yes. You were piecing together.
Yeah.
It was a while. And I knew they were going to see your giftedness and bring you on. And then they were going to give you more responsibility, which they did. Hmm. But Diane was so proud of you in that little apartment. And I think you hung up a curtain to create.
Oh, yeah. In the dining room. Yeah. To create a bedroom.
Yeah,
to
create a bedroom. That's where our bedroom was. It was and this tiny, gross apartment.
You gathered the family around and said, I'm going off to work. Yeah. You were like waiting tables at some little restaurant. And then you had that other weird job that was a few hours at night. Yeah. You weren't complaining. You weren't whining. Mm. You said, let's thank God for the jobs that dad's going to. And you prayed over your family.
Mm. Yeah.
And so kids watched that. Okay. Yes. So that is more important than what Diane is saying, providing them with every sport or everything. Yeah. And we can't afford to put them. My kid really wants to do soccer, but we can't afford the uniform. Oh, they're going to suffer forever. No, they're not. I'm thinking of the word perspective. So you taught your kids perspective. You actually taught them that God is going to provide for us. And look, he gave us this apartment and didn't it have mold or something like
that? Black mold. It was disgusting. Yeah,
there were problems there. But
you were also teaching that he was going to provide at great sacrifice to yourself to take these jobs that you were completely overqualified for. And that is, that came because of limitations.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah. Good point.
But what you modeled for them, they probably couldn't articulate that right now. But they've watched that in you guys over a period of years, and it's impacting them in the way that they're going to live their life later.
Well, thank you. That is a great reminder. I think I blocked a lot of that time of my life out.
you blocked it out, but you know what? It really happened.
No, I do remember. I recall. So that's the first, and thank you guys for your thoughts on that. God is present. Second, God is present in repair, not perfection. Yeah. Let's just say this, just to give you relief, God is not looking for perfect, not at all. He's looking for present. He's looking for you to repair. And so just to encourage anybody, we won't last long on this because we have a couple others, right? But just to give everyone space, saying I'm sorry to your kids, apologizing, taking responsibility, is one of the biggest things. Like if we're talking about knowledge and knowing a lot now, yes, you know how you're wounding your kids, but we can know with like extreme data now and clarity over a long period of time that repair is the most important part of any relationship. And so to repair with your spouse, to repair with your kids, to constantly create an ecosystem of forgiveness and repair in your home is the thing that will cover in many ways. It doesn't mean there was not pain, but it covers a multitude of sins in a deep way. And so I think it's just to remind everybody, like, you don't have to get it right. Like, everyone's stressed about, we got to get it right. Like, you won't get it right. So let's just take that pressure off. You're not going to get it fully right. You're going to mess up. And even the parents that think they're nailing it right now and doing so well, this like sneaky thing is going to happen soon where they realize they did it so well that they actually didn't set them up for success in the real world. And then their kids, in their just beautiful desire to give them everything, unintentionally gave them a burden of like, now you're in adulthood and life really works differently. And I mean, it's like, it's an impossible
puzzle to solve. You're not going to get everything right. I'm finding, feels like with younger kids, you're repairing constantly for the moment when you blow it. And then I feel like with teenagers right now, yes, it's some of it's for moments, but it's also for patterns. Like I was just talking to our oldest last week. It was one of the best conversations that we've had in a long time. But some of it was him highlighting these patterns of ways we're responding that are
working. He's not responding well. Maybe he should grow up a little.
Yes, it's true.
Maybe he should grow up a little.
It was true. He's not responding
Maybe
well.
Maybe he should be the other skinny.
But it was this moment of like, I need to repent for I need to apologize to him for the pattern. Because clearly it's like hurt him.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's this great moment where, and then I was saying, yeah, like you've got your issues. She's got her issues. Mom and dad have ours. You know exactly what ours are. Like nobody mm-hmm. is perfect.
Yeah.
And we, but what we can all do is own the parts that we're at least aware of, you know? Yeah.
And just a heads up to prepare you over the next 20 years, you will continue to do yes. those repairs. If you want to have a close relationship with your kids, you just need to start humbling yourself right now and get really good. Become mm-hmm. an expert humbler of yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you will still yes. be trying to make those repairs. And thanking God that your kids are willing to be honest instead of just withdraw from you.
Yes.
And instead of being defensive, to humble yourself in that moment and say, I'm really sorry.
Mm-hmm. So let's go. Why don't you, Phil, give us a verse on this one real quick? So I think you got one. Then we're going to go to the third one really quick.
Oh, no. We're talking about humility. I just think humility mm-hmm. is so important to God. And it's, you know, for you to do that, Elizabeth, that's humility. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you guys are authoritative parents. You're not going to let your kids just, you know, talk inappropriate to you. You're going to call them out on that because you're teaching them humility.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're also modeling it for them. And I think that's the point. But I just was thinking of this verse in Isaiah where God is saying, heaven is my throne. You know, I made it all. But to this one, I will look to the one who's humble and contrite of spirit and who trembles at my word. God says, mm-hmm. when you come to me in humility and are eager to hear my word, I'm going to be with you. Mm-hmm. And so I think that to do repair, you have to be a humble person because why should I repair? You know, you mouthed off to me, kid. You know, it's like, that's not going to work. But you do need to say to your child, no, you can't speak to me this way because you know that you've got to train them not to speak to people that way because that's not how God speaks to us and how he wants us to speak to him.
Yeah.
So but right. it's so beautiful that he says, I will be with the humble person who trembles at my word. And so I think
and
that
contrite.
It's contrite in spirit. That's that brokenness. That's that humility mm-hmm. that God made everything and yet he cares for me and he wants to come along and give me his power and his strength.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. is going to make me tremble. Like the God of the universe is going to help me raise my kids. Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, and so anyway.
Beautiful, beautiful. Good. And now, and this is
that just, was Isaiah 66:2 by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. No, you're good. Got to have the address.
Yeah.
Three, God carries the emotional weight we were never meant to hold. This is just really important so you can remember who's in control. You remember mm-hmm. who has the power to actually change. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes when any of us get stressed, myself included, the thing that we get overwhelmed by is the reality that we feel like we're responsible for everything mm-hmm. and everything is ultimately up to us. And I think we have to remember God's heart and involvement in our life and story. I always laugh a little bit because when I was growing up, when I entered adulthood, I remember my parents telling me something that was really funny, which was they said, which is not true, but they said, we were so concerned that you were the one that was going to blow your life up. Like when we looked at all of our other, our kids, you were the most concerning to us. We were pretty sure you would be the most problematic kid we had by a long shot. And I was like, thanks for speaking life, you know? Cool. Happy to unintentionally blow your minds, you know? But what was funny about that is because then I kind of asked like, well, then what did you do? And, you know, my parents, my mom especially, but, you know, they grew up, but in their adulthood found Jesus and they would pray. And they said, we just honestly prayed about it. And I think it's just like, that's such a simple phrase that I think encapsulates the whole thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, when you are stressed, when you are overwhelmed, hand these burdens to Jesus. You mm-hmm. weren't meant to hold them. You don't have the capacity to hold them. You're mm-hmm. trying to hold something that you were never even trained to hold. It's like almost like a bodybuilder that's supposed to hold. You never trained to be a bodybuilder, but you're supposed to just all of a sudden bench 1,000 pounds. Like you can't do it. Your body's not made for it. You were not designed to hold that. So handing it to God specifically, I think, is huge. Naming that invisible load. What is making you anxious? What are you fearful of? having some sort of rhythm, 1 Peter 5, casting all your anxiety on him. Like, what is your process? What does it look like to hand anxiety to Jesus? It's not complicated. It's simply just taking a moment. Sometimes I find physical posture just helps heart and mental posture. So if it's getting on your knees, if it's even just like laying down, opening your hands, just like any of these surrendered type postures really help when it comes to carrying these loads. So find something like to hand, like find a way, your way to hand these to Jesus, because you can't hold it alone. It's overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't, what we don't pray about, we worry about.
Yeah.
Psalm 61, yes. Verse 2, when my heart is faint, like when I'm feeling overwhelmed, yes, lead me to the rock that is higher than I, for you have been a refuge for me, a tower of strength against the enemy. I will take refuge in the shelter of your wings. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
That, yeah. How often do we not do that? We just, I not do that?
Oh,
I just start like spouting off today. And what am I going to do about this? I mean, this guy criticized me. Why don't you like do that verse you quoted?
By this guy, I mean Brooke. Just kidding. Well, I mean, there's a lot we could say on that, but I want to just, these last two are really important. And, you know, our hope today is just to give you a beginning point, right? A beginning space to do this. Fourthly, and I think this is really important. Stop waiting for a village and start with one person. Sometimes ideals are helpful to live into, and sometimes the ideal can be crushing. I love the ideal of village. I love when people are like, we were meant for villages. Where's your tribe? Awesome. The majority of the world works in isolation, and it's the loneliest generation. It's one of the loneliest moments in our history. So I love the idea of a village too. The problem is culture, the way even homes are set up in America, as just one example, these things are not like leaning towards village. So you have to create it, right? But it doesn't just like, you want to be my village? You want to be my village? It really does start with one relationship, one person, one moment. And so I love the ideal of a village. And if you have one, thank God for it, because it's not very easy to come by. Secondly, if you really desire that, begin to pray about it first, start with that. And secondly, begin to talk to other people that might desire village type life too. And there's a lot of people that do work on this, and how do you actually establish that? But just before you get angry at everyone for not wanting to be a village.
Yeah.
Start with one
person. I just think of that idea of like initiation. Like, we're always waiting for it to come to us or just things like that. But like, especially when it comes to community, especially if you don't have grandparents, you're like, we're doing this like totally alone. Like, it might be that you need to be the one to initiate, and it might not work the first time. Like the first person you're like, hey, could we share some childcare together? Could we like that? It might not work the first time. You might have to have the resilience to try again and again and again. But I just think of initiation, and this is going to sound so like I was a pastor's kid, because I was, initiation and cultivation. Like, you also have to cultivate community like that over time. And that means that we have to stay resilient with each other, stick with each other long enough to be like, I know the good and the not so good about that person, but we are committed to living in community together, at least trying to help each other raise our kids. Like, and it's, so what you said, it's not going to look like the ideal all the time, but we have to start somewhere. And I think so many of us are like, I think of even in my own life right now, I keep saying that I'm going to bring this group of women together in Bend where we live because I would like closer friendship. I keep saying I'm going to bring this group together and like see if we can form
this,
a, you know.
Is this your way of getting friends? So if you community. Live in the Bend area, would you specifically
No, but like I keep saying I have lots of friends, but they all feel scattered and I would like everybody to feel a little more connected. I keep saying I'm going to do it. I've yet to actually do it.
Yeah. You do have a couple things going on, my idealistic lady.
I do.
My word.
My point is I can sit for years and years and years and wish that friendships were different.
Yeah.
Or I could at least attempt to pull some people together.
Yeah, go get them.
And I think oftentimes we are like waiting for somebody else to do it. Maybe you are the somebody else.
Let me jump in and say, you just illustrated why parenting in this generation is harder than our generation. Mm. And I'm thinking of when I was a little kid, the most moms were home. So my mom had community. Mm-hmm. We were at school and you know, they were in each other's houses. And I knew all the neighbors across the street, neighbors left, right, neighbor. You don't have that anymore. Mm-mm. And it's so it's that's why it's hard for you to pull this together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you've got both husband and wife working and you've got everything's moving so fast, yeah. and then there's like travel, there's, you know, yeah. jobs mm. are, you know, travel way oriented. So it's real. It's real. And it makes it difficult. It's yeah. too bad. You know, I was thinking of what we, Diane and I got to teach in, the intentional parenting material in Albania, which is north of Greece. Well, in that culture, the families oh. stay together. If you drive through mm-hmm. Albania, it's north of Greece. You're going down the road and you see these houses. They're not even nice houses, but they're like triple stories. What happens is the parents build a house. When the kids get married, they like build another house.
With and
when
they cement have blocks.
Cement blocks. Wow. Yeah. It's ugly. But then they have kids, they build the next level. And so you have grandparents and the kids and the next kids.
Wow.
And that's how they do life. And that's how and they're not wealthy. And they're out in more rural, nice houses. Yeah. But that's so much easier to have what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yes.
When you're
plus you have the neighbors. Okay. So you have the opposite of that now in America. You have the global economy and you have all this brokenness too. And then you've got so it's harder.
Yeah, that's it is harder.
But it's not impossible.
I don't think, Phil, that your mom ever had to give thought to pulling a group of women together
for
friendship. They were right outside her door.
Totally.
No, and I could hear their names. Gloria Connor was across the street. And so, you know. Yeah. So
the fact that you still remember her name is proof of what you're saying. But I think, but just to maybe just highlight, you hear everyone saying it. This is so important. And starting with a person is one safe relationship because we have that. But I mean, how regularly is it even for parents? It's almost comical, especially with moms. I find this, at least I hear this from you. I'm not meeting up with other moms. So what I hear from you saying constantly is like, yeah, I would love to hang out. And the other mom goes, I would love to hang out. And then there's this kind of joke like, we'll probably actually hang out in a month to 2 months, realistically.
There you go.
No, and literally.
That's two, not, no, it's not an exaggeration.
I'm telling a friend who she's in school and working. Mm-hmm. I'm working, homeschooling, we are like talking about the fact that we would love to spend more time together. And literally the last thing I said was, this summer we should hang out at the pool because we're in mom and dad's neighborhood that has a great pool. Like, we go to the pool all the time. We should hang out at the pool this summer. Like, it's March and we're planning to hang out this summer.
I'll see you in June.
But like, but we're both acknowledging that's realistic.
That is
like, it's
realistic.
Probably not going to happen before that.
But can I just say something that's going to bother everyone in this room, but especially everyone listening? It's not as complicated as we all make it.
Yeah.
Because the fact is, like, in right now, I'm doing this new thing this last 2 weeks. It's been very effective. And I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm saying this has actually been how crazy it's been. Instead of planning meetings, I'm like, just call me when you're available. Don't plan a meeting. Call me on this day or this day.
Yeah.
No time. Like, I've talked with more people with less meetings on the calendar by just having a general openness to just connect when it comes and to get out of some of the rigidity. And I think why I'm highlighting that is because I've been surprised at, I would assume naturally, like, well, no, just scheduling something in the summer just makes sense. Yeah. I think there also has to be a loosening of rigidity around schedule and protection. And I'm so scared I'm not going to get what I need. There's real things. We all need balance and all that. But I would just say, if you want a village, you also have to be available for the village. You have to be available to make space. You have to have copious amounts of time that aren't planned with something else, whether that be sports, recharge time, like all these things matter, but like sometimes we can overdo it. So just to say, lastly, five, because this is a very important one, regularly release fear as much as you can. Just want to encourage you, regularly release fear. This is the stuff that will kill you if you think about it too much. Like, how much could you mess up your kids? How much could you do? Very, very, very much. You could do so much damage. And in part we do. But if anyone's listening to this and wanting to actually do something different, like, that's the encouragement.
Then you should come to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat in Franklin, because I am talking about this, about fear and anxiety, because
that's true.
Because especially moms, but dads too.
Like, no, all of us feel it.
Carry it so much. It's been fascinating to study what the scriptures have to say about it, and fascinating to study the difference between fear and anxiety. And I would say so much of what we face as parents is anxiety, which are future things that could happen. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the word for anxiety in the scriptures means to have a divided mind, like where we're just, our mind is just pulled in this other direction, as well as we're like trying to stay centered, trying to trust Jesus, but our mind is like constantly pulled in these other directions. And just having, it's not that that's not going to happen. We live in a fallen world where our bodies were never meant to live in the fear that they live in. But that idea of like retraining our minds to when those thoughts come, bringing them back to the one who can do something about it.
Yeah.
Because we can't.
Diane and Phil, close us out.
In the notes, it says, need a verse for this point. Well, I found a verse, but Diane just grabbed my Bible.
Because I was going to look at his Bible for this verse.
Oh, and I already had it open, so you can take it away.
Sweetheart. I can steal the verse this time.
It's not my verse. It's everybody's verse.
So actually, as a senior in high school, my best friend and I went through the Navigators program of Bible verse memory together. And this was one of the first ones we memorized. And I remember it having a huge impact on my life at like 17 years old, because I was pretty fearful. And I love this verse still, and so does Phil. And it comes from Isaiah again, Isaiah 41:10 in the New American Standard. I just like it because it speaks so authoritatively. Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not anxiously look about you. That means on your phones too. Not anxiously look about you. For I am your God, not the approval of others. I will strengthen you. Surely I will help you. Surely I will uphold you with my righteous right hand.
Mm.
And I just think that's a beautiful verse, but it's also has followed by several other verses about the people who feel like they're against you.
Yeah.
Behold, those who are angered at you will be ashamed and dishonored. Those who contend with you will be as nothing and will perish. And then he says it again. For I am the Lord your God who upholds your right hand, who says to you, do not fear. Yeah. I will help you.
Yes. I think that that's the place to end it today. Yeah. God will help you. And thank you for following along today. I think that as a reminder, this is something that is real. There's an invisible mental load. There are things and dynamics, but just like any other generation or time before, God has already provided a way of help through his Spirit, through so many practical tools. Now, it doesn't mean that everything's going to all of a sudden get easier, but our hope today is that you take this and apply it to your life. Listen with your friends, with your spouse, talk about this. Like, I think this is hopefully the beginning of a conversation with your family and friends. And then as much as you can, invite, if family is healthy, where can you start inviting family in? Where can you start inviting that village to begin to hold this with you? But thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.